Hi, everyone. Welcome to a Baseball America College podcast, along with Michael and Anna and Ted Cahill. I'm John Manuel. Jim Schoener's on assignment this morning, but we will talk college baseball today on this podcast. We'll talk about our top 25, which is sponsored by Louisville Slugger, and we'll, of course, bring you another tale of SeatGeek, as SeatGeek and the SeatGeek app sponsor Baseball America's podcast, both pro and college. But let's just dive right in, guys, to the top 25. It's kind of boring if we want to talk about the top. I'm sure we'll talk SEC, Pac-12, ACC, some of these power conferences that populate the top of the rankings. I thought we'd start off with the bottom of the rankings and some changes at the back this week. We have three new teams in the top 25. Gone are Georgia Tech, Alabama, and East Carolina. Coming into the rankings are College of Charleston, Long Beach State, and Michigan State. And Ted, we'll start with you. I think you are, and it's too bad that Jimmer's not here because he was College of Charleston was his Omaha sleeper. I believe, Mike, you and I had Notre Dame in BNO speak, which is under 500 right now. And got swept by Louisville to start ACC play. No shame in losing a series of Louisville, but Notre Dame might still be asleep with after getting swept.
They'll wake up at some point.
But I don't share your confidence, but I appreciate your confidence. But College of Charleston was Jim's pick to click in his Omaha sleeper, Teddy. And you've been banging the drum for first-year coach Matt Heath and this team as well. And no Monty Lee, no Nick Pappas, no problem. College of Charleston so far off to an 11-4 start. And against a strong schedule, Teddy, the only series loss was at Florida State. And even there, they avoided a sweep. So what's Charleston doing right, and what got them ranked?
Yeah, they, I mean, like you said, they're off to a strong start. It's 11-4, and two of those losses are at Florida State, and, you know, you go down to Tallahassee, and, you know, that's a really tough series, and they won on Friday night before Florida State was able to come back and win that series. But so Charleston starts off, you know, with a new coach, but their pitching has been strong. Nathan Helvey there on Friday night, and Bailey Ober on Saturday. Those two guys are kind of leading the charge. But, you know, Charleston has shown that they can win in multiple different ways. They beat Mercer 17-12 on Sunday, so they can win with pitching and they can win with hitting. And Matt Heath definitely had inherited a good team that. There from Monty Lee, that he, in large part, you know, he was the recruiting coordinator. Right. So, you know, they bought in very quickly. It was a familiar face, and he was obviously a huge part of all of those guys getting to Charleston. And he also is a little unique in college baseball. I guess he's not exactly unique. I don't know this for 100%, but he is one of the rare head coaches who both did pitching and hitting while he was an assistant coach. In his first stint at Charleston, I believe it was, he was the pitching coach. He went away and was a scout for a while. Monty Lee brought him back, this time as the hitting coach. And so he can do different things. And you know, they've got a lot of talent on that roster. And
yeah, I like the way their team just sets up. You know, you lose RBI guy in the middle of the lineup bat like Pappas, who left the program in the fall. You know, for a lot of mid-majors, or a lot of teams don't have the depth to replace a player of that stature, but they've just kind of slid Bradley Jones over there. And I know that Bradley Jones was right there with him in the middle of the lineup last year. He's one of my favorite kind of sleeper, I don't know if he's a sleeper prospect, but for this year's draft, a guy who's a left fielder, first baseman for Charleston, but played shortstop in the Valley League last year. I think there's some pro scouts who think he could have a, where you could sign him, draft him, and send him out as a third baseman. He's not a, you know, I guess if you're looking for a comp in this area recently, it's kind of similar to Ryan Cordell, who was at Liberty. Similar physicality, some power, some athleticism. I'm not sure he's quite as athletic as Cordell, but might have a little bit more polished bat, and give them a presence in their lineup. And, you know, this is a program that, in general, has hit over the years. They're not really, you know, tearing it up offensively right now, but they do draw a lot of walks. And like you said, they have some speed, they have some power, they have some different ways to beat you. And I think Ober's just going to get better.
Right.
He's still coming back from the Tommy John. I just remember the week before the season started, he was still, you know, kind of getting built up, where Coach Heath was communicating with a lot of the area scouts here about keeping them posted on how Ober was progressing. So this is a, they do have a pretty good 1-2 punch in Helvey and Ober. I would imagine, Teddy, that's going to be a, especially if Ober keeps building up and keeps getting better, that's going to be a formidable 1-2 when it comes regional time.
Indeed. And the thing to remember about Ober is I saw them on opening weekend, and I saw Ober's first start, and he was not at that point even a full year removed from Tommy John. Like, the anniversary was the next weekend, I believe. So he really is, it's just good that he's back pitching and that he's pitching, you know, reasonably well. He'll get better, you would imagine. And he's always going to be a guy that has to be pretty good with his command. He's not overpowering. And that's often the last thing to come back from when you're on the recovery from Tommy John. And he's not quite all the way there yet. But in the meantime, Helvey is showing that they have a real Friday night starter even without Ober being that guy yet.
That's a good place to start, and you know, pitching has been the hallmark of Long Beach State's program. And Mike, we brought the beach, we brought the dirt bags, the beach, the 49ers. They go by many names. Right now, they go by number 24.
Right.
And it's kind of been a long time coming for Troy Buckley. I know you talked to him yesterday, Teddy, but I mean, like, what made us rank Long Beach State, Mike? What made us put them 24?
Right. Well, you know, you look at their resume, the 10-5, they've played a tough schedule so far. You know, you look at their last three weekends, they have series wins against Oklahoma this past weekend, Nebraska the weekend before, and Arizona State. They have a midweek win against UCLA, a 10-1 win, you know, a pretty impressive showing there. I mean, they've been playing tough teams, and they've been playing well, and, you know, it's a team that, you know, has a lot of athleticism. They can beat you in a lot of different ways. You know, Garrett Hampson is the top prospect on that team, their shortstop. He's off to a really nice start with the bat. He's batting .397. This year, you know, he's stolen 8 bases. I mean, he's a guy who's a very dynamic player, and
he really is kind of that. Them, he seems like he's the straw, you know. And
yeah.
I'll give him the credit. He's not even from Vegas, but I like him anyways. From Reno, but Hampson was a top 200 guy out of high school on the BA 500, and I know it wasn't a stellar look for him last summer with the college national team. I mean, honestly, it was a little underwhelming. I was kind of looking for more out of Garrett Hampson, but for Long Beach State. It's just that he's just been so consistent for them. Another thing that he does is he's been a very reliable defender for
right.
them. And this is always a pitching and defense program. It seems like on the mound, they're pretty solid.
Right, yeah. I mean, that's what's gotten them to this point is their pitching and defense. I mean, you look at the pitching numbers, and in particular, the bullpen has been, you know, it's been a lockdown bullpen for them so far. And, you know, Chris Mathewson was a guy who was great for them last year as a freshman.
He's a great baseball name, let's face it.
Yeah.
I mean, Chris Mathewson is like his parents had him destined. I hope someone there is calling him Big Six. 100-year baseball nickname joke of the day. But really is like, well, who should know who Christy Mathewson is these days? That's 100 years ago.
I mean, he's an original Hall of Famer. I feel
he was
like,
one of the first six.
Yeah, I feel like baseball fans should know.
I'll say that when you type in Christy on the Google, Brinkley comes up first. You don't get Mathewson in your first five choices. So people are forgetting about Christy Mathewson, also nicknamed the Christian Gentleman, the Gentleman's Hurler, or Matty. I think he'd just be like C Matt these days, but. But Chris Mathewson, keeping his memory alive, at least for this podcast, Mike. I'm sorry.
Exactly. No, it's fine. Yeah, Christy Matheson's a little bit before my time, but I am familiar with his work.
We've got to get Josh Norris in here if you want somebody contemporary.
I'm also familiar with Christy Brinkley's work. So, Chris Mathewson, you know, as a freshman was great last year. And, you know, this year he's been a little more up and down. But as a whole, you know, that staff has been, you know, pitched to a 2.86 ERA as a team as a whole. So as long as they keep pitching and, you know, playing defense with the athleticism that they have there, they should be fine.
I think you hit the big point. I mean, they've always been like a pitching first program. And I think that's their reputation is always going to be that with Troy Buckley. I know they've made some changes to Blair Field. I know it's supposed to play a little more fair. But to me, just talking to Coach last year, after right around the draft time, he just thought that was their focus, was trying to get more athletic. And it's going to be interesting for them because leading into conference play, they've got Columbia coming in this weekend, but it's a 4-game series.
And can't overlook Columbia.
Then Derek Phelps, assistant coach in their basketball program. All-time favorite Carolina point guard. But I digress. But they play Fullerton next weekend in a non-conference series. And I wanted to bring Fullerton into this, guys, because we've talked about Fullerton as well every week. It seems like Fullerton is right there on the cusp of our top 25. And that was one of our big debates was, do we want to bring in Long Beach State when we haven't ranked Fullerton? I think we all think Fullerton's a regional team. And if we were picking somebody to win the Big West, I think we're still picking Fullerton. But resume right now, we've got Long Beach State slightly ahead, right?
Yeah, yeah, I think that's a good way to phrase it. I mean, I think we still like the Titans team, but you have to go on performance too. And I think, you know, Long Beach State's season so far has been louder than the Titans at this point. But I do still really like this Titans team. I like the pitching staff that they have. And I think, you know, kind of what they did last year too, you know, things came together at the end for them. And I think that's just the way this team is. I think they have to kind of figure things out and put the pieces together. But I think, you know, I have faith in that coaching staff and Vanderhook that they'll be able to do that by the end of the year and be where they need to be.
And Teddy, isn't that the only other part of the common opponent these two teams have is Arizona State? It was midweek versus weekend, but Long Beach won 2 of 3 against the Sun Devils, who had 3 walk-offs, by the way, this weekend. Did you guys see that? They did the exact same thing. I had someone on Twitter ask me, hey, has anyone ever had 3 walk-off wins in a row here like Arizona State did this weekend? I said, I have no way to look this up. I know it just happened 3 weeks ago in Chapel Hill because we were wondering, did that ever happen before? And now it's happened twice in 3 weeks, which is
pretty nuts.
You got to love baseball. But today they do have this common opponent. And Fullerton lost twice to Arizona State. So that was kind of our justification, I guess I'd say, Teddy. But you share Mike's conviction that if you had to put money on one of those two teams to win the Big West, would it be one of those two teams or would it be the Gauchos now?
Yeah. The other thing about Fullerton, to get back to their resume just for a second, is that they also have a series loss. And at Stanford is a tough series on opening weekend. But Long Beach has won 4 weekends. And they did open against Holy Cross, which is not necessarily as aggressive as Stanford. But Holy Cross has played teams really tough. They just lost 3 one-run games at South Florida.
It's a Holy Cross's world. Who knew? I mean, the basketball team winning the Patriot or the America East or whatever league they are. Patriot League, I was right the first time. I mean, you would have thought that Bill Simmons' Twitter feed would have told me more about Holy Cross, but it did not.
But, you know, so the Big West is really competitive this year, and I know if you made me bet, I probably would just give you your money back, because, you know, between Long Beach and Fullerton and UCSB and Irvine, for that matter, I mean, it's a really tough league this year, and it's always a tough league,
right?
But those teams have all started off pretty well in non-conference, and most of them are playing very aggressive schedules, and Troy Buckley said last night, you know, that, you know, he likes playing that aggressive schedule, and, you know, he knows that the coaches in the conference share that, you know, Dave Snow at Irvine for sure, and Checkitz at UCSB, and Vanderhook at Fullerton. You know, they all play very aggressive schedules, but Buckley made the point that, you know, that's great and all, but he knows this only matters if they actually, you know, play well in conference. That
at
it's
some
only
point
helpful.
In, yeah,
it's only good if it helps you. And so that they've got to be able to apply the lessons that they're learning now in non-conference against what looks to be a very tough Big West slate.
I mean, certainly Mike Gillespie, I'll correct you, Mike Gillespie, not Dave Snow, the other old Southern California coach. They are, a lot of them are pretty old down there. There's some younger ones, but they're all pretty old, which makes it nice for me because I'm getting there too. But I mean, a great example, Irvine this weekend. I didn't know we were going to have Big West talk, but I like it. I love the league. But how about, you know, again, you mentioned it, Irvine this weekend, they go to Tennessee, and they got pounded the first 2 games by Tennessee. Great, it's a great thing for Dave Serrano, obviously used to be at Irvine, that Tennessee, we've been kind of waiting to see what Tennessee would do. This might be a good SEC segue, although we should talk about the Spartans. But 26 runs the first 2 games, and then Irvine, this is just a classic Irvine thing to me, and a classic Big West thing to me. A, that you're going to go on the road, play anybody, play an SEC team. And then B, that you're going to give up 26 runs and then you're going to throw a shutout on Sunday. That's just, that's hard to do. I saw Pitt do it against North Carolina this weekend. They give up 18 runs the first 11 innings with their pitching staff against North Carolina. Then shut them out the rest of the way. But, you know, so that's a good sign for Irvine that they were able to arrest that weekend's series and avoid the sweep. Still another week until, a couple of weeks until Big West conference play starts for a lot of those clubs. But Long Beach State, the first Big West team in this week with Fullerton among those teams that's on the outside looking in. But like you said, I think that league is going to be pretty stout. We've got 2 Big Ten teams ranked this week. Michigan remains in the rankings on a very strong week for the Wolverines. They swept Hawaii, but Michigan State gets into the rankings, and I guess the main reason that you know, to me, Michigan State, Coach Boss, the program has just been so consistent over the years. It feels like their RPI is always in that 45 to 60 range by the time the season's over. Obviously, like a lot of other Northern teams, they haven't played a home game yet. I don't know that they have a signature win, I guess, yet, Teddy. But I guess their signature was being in Pensacola for that weekend and shutting out Auburn and Troy back to back. But they had their only loss of the year was also that weekend against Southern Miss. What do the Spartans hang their hat on for the 2016 version?
Yeah, the unfortunate thing is that they are kind of lacking a marquee series win because they haven't played any series because in a quirk of scheduling, their first 14 games have been all in these early season tournaments. So they've played 14 different teams. And they've gone 13-1, and they've collected some pretty solid wins along the way. UCF, Auburn, Troy, Florida Gulf Coast. These are all solid wins that are going to help them RPI-wise, and already are helping them. If you look at the early RPI stuff, which is, you know, tenuous at this point, but they're a top 10 RPI team at this point, and that's big for them as they look to potentially put themselves in the mix for an at-large bid, which has been, you know, an iffy thing for them in the past. But if a Northern school like that is already so high in the RPI that they should be able to collect a few more solid wins there in the Big Ten and potentially position themselves better this year.
You know, I just, the thing that jumps out to me about Michigan State is I did the Texas Collegiate League last summer. I ranked a couple there, armed with some real promise. Ethan Landon and Dakota, I think it's pronounced Mekis, both redshirt sophomores. And those two guys are both off to great starts. I know that they like their pitching. I'm going to pull a JJ here and butcher another guy's name, but Cam Vo, I guess it is, Vo. He's been outstanding for them. But Landon, big arm, 6'6" out of their in their rotation, has pitched well. He's pitching as he was advertised last summer, stays tall in the delivery, stays down the zone, gets ground balls and have a lot of strikeouts. But Dakota Mekis has been outstanding out of their bullpen. 15 and a third innings, 2 hits, 26 strikeouts.
That'll get the job done.
Getting the job done. So they're overall, he's walked some guys. But he's like a college version of Tyler Glasnow. I mean, very hard to hit, 3 true outcomes kind of guy. Hopefully not the home runs. It's been a great start for them on the mound. 2.16 ERA. And again, they're not pitching ever at home. It's very hard to get in a routine when your routine is always when you've played 14 different teams, no series, tournament baseball. It's like they're playing travel ball or something like that here. I just think it's harder to be consistent under those circumstances. And so far, and again, a testament to those players, their toughness, and to the coaching staff. And now they do get into series play. They're at South Florida, and then Big Ten play starts with that big Big Ten rivalry, Spartans-Rutgers. I hate expanded conferences. And they have another RPI opportunity because they've got Oregon at home this weekend again. 2 weekends from now, I should say. So that's going to be interesting. So I like the Spartans. I like what they've done so far. When we looked at them preseason, I know we discussed them for the preseason top 25. I liked their pitching. Again, it was based off, okay, what did I know? What did I report? I knew those two guys, and just looking at their questionnaire, it did seem like they had some pitching potential there. So far, so good for the Spartans.
Yeah, getting Cam Villa, I believe it's Villa, back.
You're the French expert in the office.
Getting him back for this season was big. That gives them an experienced arm on Friday night, and they've gotten some guys to step up offensively. And yeah, I think it's a good club, and they're very well coached. Jake Boss is. Is maybe one of the more underrated coaches, even in the Big Ten, where there are a lot of solid coaches. But he's done a great job with that program.
I think I would call him Jake Bouse if I saw him in person, and he would probably say, "Yeah, I've never heard that before." So, Baseball America College Podcast with Mike and Teddy. I'm John, and I wanted to remind you that we're sponsored by SeatGeek. And if you've ever been frustrated by trying to buy tickets online, you realize that a lot of sites make it complicated and then try to sneak in huge fees at checkout. That's why you need to try SeatGeek. They've made it easier than ever to buy and sell sports and concert tickets. They've taken the work and hassle out of shopping for tickets. SeatGeek pulls all the tickets available on other sites into one place so you can save time and never miss a deal. You can even set alerts for upcoming games, and SeatGeek will let you know if ticket prices fall. I mean, that's even the case here at the PNC Arena. Just doing a radio hit this morning, and they were talking about Garth Brooks and his three shows over in Raleigh. And SeatGeek would have told you, if you were a Garth Brooks fan — I'm not a Garth Brooks fan, I'm more of a Chris Gaines guy myself — but they would have told you that which night Garth Brooks had the best price available, the best seats available. If you want to get your Garth Brooks fix, SeatGeek was the way to get it. And even better, every ticket on SeatGeek is given a grade based on value, so you can immediately find underpriced seats. Before you buy, you can use SeatGeek's detailed maps to see the view from your seat. And best of all, SeatGeek's always honest and upfront about price. Unlike StubHub, SeatGeek allows you to see the full ticket price from start to finish and never surprises you with huge fees at checkout. Baseball America podcast listeners get a $20 rebate off their first SeatGeek purchase. So to get your $20 rebate on tickets, download the free SeatGeek app, go to the settings tab and click add a promo code. Enter promo code BA20, that's the letters B and A, and the numbers 2 and 0. SeatGeek will send you $20 after you've made your first ticket purchase. Download the free SeatGeek app and enter promo code BA20 today. And we, again, welcome SeatGeek as a sponsor of our podcast here at Baseball America. Don't forget, Thursday is our pro podcast with myself and J.J. Cooper. And J.J. will be coming to you from Florida as he starts his spring training tour. Speaking of Florida, guys, let's go to the top of the rankings real quick. Heavy SEC presence as usual. Florida, Texas A&M, obviously Vanderbilt's checking in at number 5, LSU at 7. I guess the news on the SEC front this weekend, guys, I mean, was there big news on the SEC front? Seems like it was pretty much a chalk weekend. A lot of teams playing fairly weaker competition in preparation for SEC play starting next, conference play starting this weekend.
Yeah, I mean, I think it was pretty much status quo for the SEC this week. You know, I think it was a pretty easy decision for the most part, keeping it chalk in the top 10 in our poll. You know, I think the only thing that, you know, maybe caught at least my eye was LSU and Ball State, that series. You know, Ball State takes that first game, and then, you know, they're leading in that second game, a chance to, you know, if they had taken that series, you know, there would have been some shuffling there. But
that would have been epic.
Yeah, it would have been, but LSU, you know, clawed back and won the rest of that series. So that was certainly an interesting thing. And Teddy's shaking his head over here, so let's go ahead and let him weigh in.
The Ball State grad in the room knew that was a one-time deal. Look, Ball State, you know, incredible win on Friday night. Great job by the Cardinals. But Rich Maloney threw all of his bullets that one game. You know, they were leading, and he put in his Saturday starter, Zach Plesac, out of the bullpen to close that game out, and it worked. But that meant that they did not have the pitching the rest of the weekend. Like, this is what happens to MAC schools, and you know, I know people were very impressed by that, but that's what Ball State does. You know, they go down and they win games like this every once in a while.
I thought you were gonna say like football and crab cakes. That's what Ball State does.
Well, they definitely don't do football. No bowl wins in school history.
Yikes!
But
like South Carolina pre Brad Scott.
Yeah. But yeah, so that was a good win for Ball State. But LSU, you know, showing well, coming back, and you know, getting the job done. They've had some scares this year. Sac State took a game off of them, and Cincinnati on opening day, they required opening or extra innings to win that. And you know, so LSU still kind of figuring it out with all those young players. But the one team that really stood out for me in the SEC this weekend was Mississippi State, and you know what they did to Oregon, sweeping Oregon and Starkville, and just the way they did it, hammering Oregon's starting pitching. I mean, that was, to me,
the biggest series of the weekend, basically.
And yeah. I think that was one of the most impressive series wins, period, this year. You know, Ole Miss beating Louisville and Miami, or Florida beating Miami in Miami, and then that. Like, those three are, like, the standout series to me so far this year.
You know, let's focus on the Bulldogs and the Ducks, because maybe Duck Nation won't notice because they have a number one seed in the basketball tournament. But if you are a baseball fan of Oregon, and if that's probably who listens to this podcast, is baseball fans.
I would hope so. Yeah.
If you're a baseball fan, don't you have to be concerned that this is the same old story for Oregon? I mean, all their eggs are in the pitching basket, and at some point, they got to figure out the offensive piece. I mean, it didn't seem like they were so off on the on that piece until this weekend. But once their pitching just got drilled, and I mean, you have to give Mississippi State. I mean, we should give Mississippi State credit again in a minute. I want to talk about what they did right offensively. But what's the deal with Michigan? I mean, with Michigan, with Oregon. What's up with this team? Why can't they hit?
Yeah, there are five starters right now hitting under 200. As a team, they aren't hitting. It's bad, and it's been like this for a while now. You know, I don't know what it is exactly. I know that park is built for pitching, and so in some respects, they're building their team to play to their park. But this is why they haven't broken through yet, basically, is that, you know, since the program has restarted, they've been built on pitching, and it's been very good, and they've just never been able to put that next piece with it, you know, the hitting piece, to make this a complete team. And Mississippi State can pitch. You know, Dakota Hudson is for real on Friday night, and, you know, they got good pitching all weekend, but Oregon wasn't hitting against UCSB or Illinois State or San Diego State either. Yeah, this is not new.
Yeah, they hit a little bit against San Diego State the first game, and it seems like this weekend, they're in that first game against Mississippi State. It's 5-4 in the eighth. What a top 25 game should be. And let's real quick throw some kudos George Horton's way for the scheduling. He doesn't have to go to Michigan State, and he doesn't have to go to Mississippi State. They've got a great park on campus. They can play early in the year. I mean, it's not ideal. But Coach Horton, to his credit, they'll go anywhere and play anybody, wherever. And I think this is really cool that they went to Mississippi State and played it. Four different names, ballpark. What is it? Polk Dement Field at Duty Noble Stadium with Polk Dement Field, I think
that's
what it is.
Yeah.
And Hudson struck out 9 against them, but yeah, they give up the 5 runs in the 8th inning, and it seems like they weren't competitive the rest of the weekend, Mike. I mean, I like the way that, on paper, I mean, Matt Croon's a highly regarded freshman. Goldfarb, Craig St. Louis, A.J. Balta, they've got some guys who've done some things offensively in college, but how crippling do you think this will be for Oregon? Do you think Oregon can come back from this kind of series and this kind of poor offensive start and still be competitive in the Pac-12?
I think it'll help returning home. You know, obviously they're starting Pac-12 play, but they're playing Utah, which, you know, they've got some talent, but isn't one of the top teams in the Pac-12. So I think it'll help returning home into pitcher-friendly confines there. And get their pitching staff back on track, because obviously that's what they need to win.
Well, they didn't help this weekend either. This was not their best work on the mound.
Right, but you know, you look at their offense, and yeah, I mean, it is certainly not a good sign to have five starters hitting below 200, and then another starter hitting exactly 200. So
they struck out 30 times this weekend. I mean, Dakota Hudson was part of that, but they struck out 15 times on Saturday.
Yeah, right.
It was just a pretty ugly series, and I guess it says a lot also about Mississippi State. I mean, a team that went, you know, again, kudos on their schedule as well. Went out to Dodgertown, or not to Dodgertown, went out to the Dodger Stadium Classic last weekend. I guess I'm changing the question, but is this more of a good sign for Mississippi State in your mind, or more of a bad sign for Oregon?
You know, I think that's a good question. You know, I think there definitely need to be some concerns with this Oregon offense now, just the fact that they're reeling so much. I mean, they've had a couple of flashes. The first game against Santa Barbara, they scored 13 runs, and you know, there's some, you know, optimism after the game that, okay, the bats have finally arrived, and then after that they don't score, you know, a lick after that. So, you know, I mean, there's talent there. I mean, Matt Croon, as you mentioned, is a very talented freshman they have, and someone who George Horton was talking up, even though the numbers don't jump out, he's been a clutch hitter for them, you know, at times this season. You know, A.J. Balta, you know, I had some Pac-12 coaches tell me they thought that he would make a huge difference for them this year, having him back after missing all of last year. And, you know, he did early on. He did make a difference early on, and he has 4 home runs on the season, but that's, you know, four of his nine hits. Yeah, four of his 9 hits are home runs. So, yeah, and then obviously Phil Craig St. Louis, too. I mean, you expect a little bit more out of him after, you know, what he's shown in the past. So it is strange to
see. Two games and stick with them.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, I think they're gonna hit better than they have been, only because there's really only one place to go but up, I would think, at this point. You know, you would hope that they would hit a little bit better, but yeah, I don't know.
Teddy, I think you have your doubts about the Duck offense.
I do, and they don't have time to get it figured out. They have Utah this weekend, and that is it, because then they go to Washington, which is a solid team that can pitch. Then they go to Michigan State. Then they have Cal coming in, and then USC. And USC has not started that well, but Southern Cal can play baseball. and then they go to UCLA. So they need,
better figure it out now.
They need to get going fast. And, you know, the pitching is going to, it's going to help them stay in these games. And West Coast games are often, you know, very tight games because everyone pitches and plays defense and, you know, wants to, you know, be aggressive on the base paths and manufacture runs. You know, it's just a little bit different than what the Ducks saw this weekend at Mississippi State, but they don't have time to mess around anymore. That this is the meat of the schedule now.
Yeah, and to bring this back to the SEC, Mississippi State doesn't. They've kind of been building up. Last weekend with Oklahoma, UCLA, USC in the Dodger Stadium Classic. This week, Oregon. So they've had basically 2 weeks in a row of some West Coast ball, and they jump right into SEC play at Vanderbilt. Guys, I mean, we all know how talented Vanderbilt is year in and year out. We know about their depth. What kind of read do we really have on Vanderbilt so far this year? They've played a pretty light schedule with the one series against Stanford. They lost to Tristan Beck, who's a pretty special freshman. But otherwise, I think that's their only loss. Mm-hmm. They open at home in SEC play, which is pretty nice for them. What kind of test is Mississippi State going to give them, and what do you think of Vanderbilt so far, Tavy? What's our read on the Commodores?
Well, I think it's going to be a good test for them. They have played an interesting schedule. I think they attempted to play a decent schedule. San Diego did not provide them much of a test on opening weekend, but that's pretty typically a good team. And
yeah.
From there, UIC, if you're going to play a Horizon League team, that's one of the two to play,
right?
And then Xavier this weekend was a little iffier, but you know, they tried to play two midweeks against Radford. Well, they did play them, but you know, Radford last year was really good. This year, yeah, not so good.
And then Vanderbilt leads the SEC right now in runs scored. They lead the league in walks. They're among the league leaders in stolen bases. They're among the league leaders in home runs. I know the focus usually is on the pitching, and with good reason. Feels like offensively, Vanderbilt's maybe a little bit more potent than I was thinking.
Yeah, I think that's reasonable. You know, the losing Dansby and Rhett Wiseman and
Xander Wheel was in the middle of their lineup for, you know, 2-3 years. It feels like.
Yeah, I mean, so losing those guys, you know, they have not really suffered so far without them. That, you know, and they shouldn't really. I mean, when I talked preseason about them losing Dansby and how important that was, you know, some of it was the bat, but a lot of it was just that he's a presence and he's a leader and
right,
you have to replace that. But, you know, they have so much offensive talent with Jaron Kendall and Brian Reynolds, and Alonzo Jones has come in and just raked. And
yeah, he's been really good so far.
And some of their older players who in the past had been a little more complimentary have taken steps forward to, you know, to fill some of these holes. And, you know, there's Will Toffey at third base too. There's just so much talent to be had there that the fact that they're hitting is not that surprising to me, but the pitching staff that they're going to face this weekend is probably the best one they've faced. Stanford is a good staff. I think Mississippi State probably has more.
Wasn't it Kyle Smith last year for Vanderbilt, Mike in Omaha, who, like, they pinch hit him like in a super crucial part of the College Series Finals.
Yeah, I think he was the last batter in the College World Series. He was the last out. Yeah,
that was like his first at bat of the whole series. But I remember early in the series when I was there, watching him take BP and talking to the Kyle Parkins and their SID and then their coaching staff. His BP was ridiculous.
He's got some pop.
He's a beast. He's got 3 home runs so far this year. So
he's been a nice story for them.
Yeah, so it's neat to see, and I believe he's another one of their hockey guys too. I mean, like,
yeah,
this is like the year of college baseball players with hockey ties. So we've talked about that on the podcast. But it is neat to see that there's this next wave of Vanderbilt players. And it's not just the guys who have started early. It's a new guy. I mean, this is a senior, Kyle Smith, who's never been a big role player, never played a big role, I should say, for Vanderbilt. But you can see that they thought highly of his talent. He just didn't really have a chance to play. Now that he's getting a chance, he's off to a good start.
Right. Well, it just goes to show you how deep they've been the past couple of years, that they have players like this that have just been biding their time on the bench, waiting for a chance to play. You know, I think the biggest thing that stood out to me about Vanderbilt, and, you know, obviously aside from the guys on the offensive side, like Jaron Kendall and Reynolds and those guys, I believed in them coming into this year. I'm not surprised with what they've done, but I think it's been great to see from a Vanderbilt perspective that Jordan Sheffield has come into that Friday night role, and they haven't missed a beat. I mean, Carson Fulmer is a tough guy to replace.
Yes.
I mean, one of the toughest guys in college baseball to replace. And, you know,
he's like Dansby without hair.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, that's a mean dig at Carson's hair, but I mean, you know.
Yeah,
he only has He only has one weakness.
I think he knows that his hair is not Dansby's.
Listen, that's the only hair. That's the dude's only weakness. I mean, Carson Fulmer, as a college pitcher, was ridiculous. And they have to replace him. And, oh, by the way, it's guys who throw 97.
Yeah, no, the fact that they have, and they're not even fully healthy on the mound, too. You know, they don't have all their weapons, and they're still pitching so well. And, you know, you look at Jordan Sheffield's numbers, and, you know, the thing that really stands out to me is the strikeout-to-walk ratio, 36-7.
That was the worry. The worry was the command. And I think it'll be tested more against better competition and in the SEC, but so far, obviously so good. He's made four starts, and two of them finished as shutouts. So, and so next week's SEC slate, that's the big series to me. It does have Alabama at LSU, Arkansas at South Carolina, number two Texas A&M at Auburn, Ole Miss at Tennessee, Kentucky at Georgia, Missouri at Florida. Any of those other series jump out to you guys? It seems like Tennessee, like we've been waiting on Tennessee. Nick Senzel's made this leap this year. He's number two on our draft rankings overall. Vincent Jackson finally is a senior, really productive. They scored, as we mentioned earlier, 26 runs this weekend against Irvine in the first two games of that series, but couldn't finish that out. Do they have a shot at upsetting Ole Miss? Ole Miss has played so well to this point.
Yeah, Ole Miss is one of the hottest teams in the country right now.
So hot right
now. And they, I mean, that series is going to be interesting. You know, Ole Miss has pitched really well, but Tennessee's offense, you know, I've said it before, it's more than just Nick Senzel.
Yeah.
And yeah, there's a lot to shut down there. And Ole Miss... But Ole Miss has handled stuff. You know, they beat Louisville in a series. They went to Coastal for one of their tournaments and swept the whole, you know, swept their slate of games there. So, you know, Ole Miss has been tested, and they're going to be a good challenge there for Tennessee. But I would think Ole Miss would be able to handle that. One series that I'm interested in seeing for sure is Arkansas and South Carolina. South Carolina has a lot of wins, but outside of Clemson, which they lost, they haven't really played much of anybody. And... you know, that changes now for sure. And so we're going to see, we've had questions about South Carolina from the beginning. We've talked about them in the rankings every week since the preseason, but you know, the questions are still there. And so this weekend, for real, they have to get answered because Arkansas is a good team coming into Columbia.
Yeah, Albany, Charleston Southern, Penn State, those are their other three series wins. I mean, they probably should go, if not 15-0, hey, you know, it's difficult to win 15 games against anybody in college, or 14 games, whatever they've played against those teams, to win all those games. But I think there are other teams that have better resumes than South Carolina, but we'll really get a little bit better read on it this weekend. Let's wrap up, guys, just what we saw around here, because we all were at games. North Carolina and Pittsburgh, NC State and Boston College, Duke and Virginia. I guess the main storylines are, A, there were no sweeps in any of those three any of those three series. B, Connor Jones and Matt Theiss, Virginia at the top of this defending national championship team, still very, very good, very, very impressive. And I guess the other storyline is Boston College coming down and shutting down NC State, shutting them out twice to win that weekend series. I guess the biggest surprise is BC. Mm-hmm. You saw BC. Did you see BC at all this weekend too?
Yeah, I saw him Friday, and he was there the next 2 days. And Mike is driving the bus. Is that what you're going with on BC?
Yeah, you know, I've been on the BC train since the end of last year. I've been
saying the T, right? In Boston, isn't it the T, the transit?
Yes,
I think it is. So you're on the T.
I guess I'm on the T. I'm not very familiar with Boston modes of transportation, but you know,
neither am I apparently. Cause I'm wondering about it. So.
Yeah, but in any event, you know, after seeing them last year and knowing what they would return, I had a good feeling that they could surprise some people this year. You know, I didn't want to go out on a limb and say they were a regional team or anything like that. I still wouldn't go that far quite yet. Let's wait and see with them. But, you know, they do have a lot of talent on that pitching staff. You know, starting with Mike King on Friday, who, you know, was, you know, shut out NC State, you know, and then you look at the other arms, Justin Dunn in their bullpen. He's their closer, but he's kind of a Swiss Army knife for them. They could start him if they need to, and they can also extend him, which they did yesterday.
The old Wayne Graham phrase of moment of truth. It's your moment of truth reliever. I think he took it from Bill James, but you know, you have a closer, but who could be a one inning guy. But your moment of truth reliever is the guy that you use whenever you think the game's going to be decided.
Right.
And that's kind of how Mike Gambino used Justin Dunn. And he felt he could get the last three outs without Dunn. He needed Justin Dunn to get 10 outs in the middle of the game right. and preserved that lead, which I also saw with Pittsburgh. I don't know if Joe Giordano used calls Garrett Ramble his moment of truth guy. but he did come in the fifth inning and pitch the rest of the way in that combined shutout they had with North Carolina on Sunday. But Dunn's also a prospect. I mean, he throws in the low 90s. I know he had some command issues on Sunday, yeah. but I mean, he's a guy for them. I mean, not just a guy for college baseball, but a guy for the next level as well.
Yeah, well, he was, you know, on Sunday, and it was kind of a similar case last year when I saw him, but he was 92 to 96 yesterday.
Wow.
With two different breaking balls, kind of a harder low 80s slider, that's the better pitch, and then he can also flip in a high 70s curveball as well. You know, he's a guy who has, you know, he has a starter's repertoire. He could be a starter at the next level, and, you know, talking to Gambino after the game, he really thinks he is a starter at the next level, that a team could use him in that way. But, you know, they need him to be that moment of truth reliever, as you're talking about, and that's what he was on Sunday.
Did they start Jacob Stevens in that game?
They did, and he hasn't given up a run in 22 and two-thirds innings.
I mean, this guy's a beast. 6'4", 248 plays this or that? I mean, come on. Where do they find these guys?
And he's, you know...
He probably played hockey.
You know, and the thing with Jacob Stevens is, you know, he's not a guy, he's not going to blow the ball by you. I mean, he's 87 to 89. You know, okay. I didn't see any 90s from him, but...
Well, he's 18, so yeah. Let's give him time.
Yeah, I mean, he keeps the ball low in the zone and throws strikes. And, you know, obviously, it's been working for him. He hasn't given up an earned run, you know, at all in his college career.
It sounded on the radio, I mean, you were there, but it was kind of like a very old school approach in the ninth inning where they bring in their right fielder to close.
Mm-hmm.
And then when he struggled... It's like shifting everywhere. Everybody else is moving positions. You know, so BC doesn't have great depth, but you know they're going to have toughness.
Mm-hmm.
The quality Northeast programs have, that's what they pride themselves on. And they've also got a good catch and throw guy and Shortino behind the plate. They feel like they're a regional team, or at least and this will help. I mean, they haven't played anybody. Their schedule to this point did not indicate and will not help their RPI. Correct, Teddy?
It is horrendous. I think I saw, when I looked yesterday, it was like 296 on Warren Nolan. It's bad. But
so they're going to have to make hay in the league. This is a great way to start.
I mean, to even be in this conversation, this is a team that hasn't made the ACC tournament in like 5 years. So to even come out and show up at a ranked school on opening weekend of conference play without having gone home to play a game yet, because you can't play games in Boston in February, you know, This was important for them, and you know it can't be overlooked that you know they did this. We've got to see them keep it up now, but it's a very nice start for them.
And it doesn't get easier. They have two more road series to start league play.
Yeah,
I mean one more to say there. Well, no, they're at Clemson and they're at Pitt.
Yeah,
I mean so three straight road series to start league play. If they can survive that, and then of course at home they've got Florida State and Virginia and Louisville. The schedule does them zero favors. That's probably how they like it. I mean, that's how they're going to tell themselves that those are the games in front of them. So if BC makes it to regionals, it's going to be fairly heroic. I don't blame them for playing a quote-unquote weak non-conference schedule, because that is a hellacious ACC schedule.
Yeah.
What's the takeaway for the Wolfpack guys? We've thought pretty highly of NC State. This is probably where we should leave it. But to get shut out twice, I thought their offense would be a little bit better for them that. But I guess our concern with them really was, who is the star on this team? And I guess another question was defense. And Friday, their defense let them down. Joe Dunant with three errors at shortstop.
Yeah.
And Sunday, their veterans let them down. Bases loaded, nobody out. Palmeiro and Kisner don't get the tying or winning runs home. They don't get any runs home.
I mean, this weekend was pretty much every concern that I had about North Carolina State showing up. Yeah, they don't have a Friday night starter. They've lost three of their four Friday nights. They have lost.
Yeah.
You can't win in college baseball if you don't win on Friday night. You have to be competitive. And, you know, you have to start series well, and they haven't. And, you know, it's the, you know, who can they rely on in moments of truth on offense? You know, they're trying to play Joe Dunant at shortstop after moving him from third base. He was not good on Friday. I know he's been better than that. That was the worst he's been, but that was not good. It's a team that has some things to figure out.
Yeah, and that's not a good way to start ACC play when you start off with your first ACC game as a shortstop and you boot three balls. And I think they're better than that. But I was surprised that they... I wasn't surprised that BC was competitive. I was very surprised that NC State got shut out twice. I didn't see that happening. So that was just not expected for me. And I'm sure it wasn't expected for Elliott Ava. And their ACC schedule doesn't get a lot easier either. I know they've complained about the strength of their schedule.
One quick thing on one of their previous Friday night opponents, Jesse Schulten's at Wright State.
Yeah.
He threw a perfect game against Dayton on Friday. First time in school history for a perfect game. First no-hitter at the school in a really long time as well. And so that was obviously a really well-pitched game for him. And for Wright State, that was a nice moment. And Coach Greg Lovelady said it couldn't have happened to a better guy, that he's one of the best teammates he's ever been around.
Well, it's a pretty neat video. You can see how crazy they went for it. Yeah. The video that I watched, it was a very 2016 video because they were running out from the dugout, and then at the last second, somebody just sticks their head right in the camera. Like, make sure I'm in this Vine video that's going to go out to everybody. Last thing I did want to touch on, Houston, a team that we have had some difficulties. We've stood by the Cougars in our rankings. They had a good weekend and some news on their front as well, getting back to full strength.
Well, yeah, Seth Romero, who had been suspended for the first couple weeks, returned to action a little bit ago, but this was the first weekend that they had him in the Saturday role behind Andrew Lantrip, and that was the 1-2 punch that we expected them to have at the start of the season. That's why we thought they were the American favorites, and without him, they had struggled. They lost 5 in a row at one point, but getting him back, getting him and Lantrip going, and they went for sure this weekend against Alabama.
Big win for them.
Yeah,
top 25 series,
and it's big for them to just have that and to know that that's back.
And just one note on Andrew Lantrip here, who's their Friday ace and has been excellent this year. His strikeout to walk ratio 32-1.
Yeah, I'll take that. I'll take that on Friday night. I'll take it in a box. I'll take it with a fox. I mean, that's I take it here or there. Two notes before we sign out. Long Beach State in the rankings for the first time since the final poll in 2008. That's a long time ago. I did not realize Long Beach State had been out of the rankings that long. This is not a surprise. Michigan State ranked for the first time since April 11th, 1988. That's back before Jim Callis had kids. I think that's before Jim Callis was doing Baseball America's college top 25. I think he was still in college at that time, actually. He might have just started at BA, but the point is that's a long freaking time ago. So kudos to the Spartans for being in our rankings for the first time in 28 years. And thank you for putting up with all my tangents, guys. I think you know that's part and parcel of doing the college podcast, and the beatings will continue for the next 10 weeks. So again, thanks to SeatGeek for sponsoring the podcast. Thanks to Mike and Teddy and Jim Schoner, who wasn't on the podcast, but for all their hard work this weekend. And thank you for listening. We'll talk to you next Monday on the next Baseball America College podcast. So long, everybody.